Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, midweek Wednesday afternoon, April 30th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Lower rates sparked a surge in pending home sales as buyers moved quickly to lock in. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the U.S. gross domestic product fell in the first quarter at a 0.3% annual rate. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis, Missouri. Paul, I was in your neck of the woods last week, but let's talk about the numbers today. How do things look from your perspective west of the St. Louis Arch on Market Street?
Well, hi, Rob. Yeah, glad you were in town. Hope you had some good Italian food. The numbers this morning was a negative, so that it was a negative quarterly change. That was the first time in 3 years. But as usual, there's more going on underneath the hood than just that negative sign would indicate. And we can talk about that if you want.
And the GDP report, you hear contraction, you hear shrinking, you think inflation. But what were some of the trends that were driving that number?
So you had the coldest January since 1988, and I'm sure you all in Chicago felt that. You also had some pulling forward of purchases as people started to anticipate tariffs. There was a lot of pull forward in automobile sales, right? If you're afraid your car is going to cost $12,000 more after tariffs, you're going to try to buy a new car before that tax hits. So there was a lot of pull forward. But it was interesting also to see there's quite a bit of services spending. And, of course, the services aren't directly affected by tariffs. So what the picture we're starting to get is that, yeah, there was a lot of pulling forward of heavy equipment and automobiles by consumers, the heavy equipment by companies. But we're also seeing a pretty decent positive forward impulse from services spending, especially dining out and hotels and travel. So that maintained itself in the first quarter. That's going to be a kind of a bulwark against the negative impacts of tariffs later to come.
Now, 3 years ago around this time, we were talking about negative GDP prints in two consecutive quarters. And the question was, are we actually in a recession? But then the economy took off again in the second half of 2022. So this is just the first read. There's a very good chance that there could be some positive upward revision as we have the second and third look at the first quarter.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So the main reason why, you know, when you get these these pull forwards in cars and heavy equipment, what that does is it makes imports go up by a lot. Well, imports aren't produced here, so they're negative. That counts as a negative for the economy. And so you had the biggest negative or biggest detraction from trade since the late 1940s in this particular report. And it's all due to this pulling forward of expenditures. But when you do that, what you're doing, especially like retail stores, what they're doing is stocking up on inventory to sell into the summer and be able to sell goods to people without having to put a tariff increase on those prices. So we saw a lot of buildup in inventory, but it wasn't really reflected in these numbers yet. So we suspect, to finally get down to your question, that the big imports make a negative number today, but as we get better account on what those inventory buildups will be, they will be revised higher, and that could help push that number back into positive territory. So the way to think about the economy right now is really that it's sort of on a knife's edge. There's still some positive impulse from consumers and businesses, but the tariffs are going to be a negative. Which one will win? In the end, we think the positive side wins, but you don't know what else policy has in store for us down the road.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, home buyers jumped at the chance to lock in lower interest rates last month, sending national pending home sales sharply higher.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Pending home sales surged nationally last month. Joining us with a check on the spring housing market is Rick Sharga, founder and CEO of the C.J. Patrick Company in Orange County, California. Rick, thank you for joining us today. And the overarching theme about what is happening with the economy, and this has especially been the case since the beginning of April, is I don't know. There's a great deal of uncertainty out there, but even in this era of uncertainty, Rick, life goes on. And if that house or if that apartment is getting rather snug and you need a larger place to live, you have to make a decision regardless of the certainty or uncertainty that exists in the economy. And it seems like more and more people pulled the trigger on that larger domicile.
Well, you scared me for a minute. I thought you were expecting me to clear up all the uncertainty, which would take a whole lot longer than we have today. Pending home sales numbers typically do go up this time of year, and they went up in three of the four regions that the National Association of Realtors looks at. What's interesting is that in the three regions where the numbers went up, and they went up pretty significantly, There are a couple things in common. One is that there's growing supply. There's more inventory available to buy. And partly because of that, we're seeing home prices either slow down, not rise as fast, or in some cases, particularly in the Gulf Coast states, we're seeing those prices actually down a little bit year over year. The one part of the country where the pending sales index did not go up was the Northeast. And in the Northeast, we have much less inventory available for sale, and prices continue to go up at a higher pace. So people are buying, but they're buying where there are more deals.
And you bring up a very good point, and this is a huge debate that is taking place inside policy circles, and that is, how do you bring down the cost of shelter, and how do you encourage building, how do you put more supply on the market? Because even with mortgage rates below 7, if people want to buy, you also need people willing to sell, and with lots of homeowners still locked into those 2 and 3% mortgages, they managed to refinance at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, if they're unwilling to sell, the only action is new builds.
And we are seeing the builders doing their fair share right now. We finished last year with about 1.6 million new homes. That's above the average number of homes completed for the last 20 years. And right now we're on a somewhat similar pace for 2025. But to your point, it'll take a long time for the builders to make up that gap. And our best hope really is that mortgage rates continue to come down, albeit a bit slowly, more slowly than we'd like. But as those mortgage rates come down, as people age out of their homes, we will see more properties coming to market. And inventory of existing homes for sale is up about 30% year over year. So we could be getting back to pre-pandemic levels of inventory as we get through the end of 2025.
Now I'm going to ask you to tackle the uncertainty question, Rick. I'm very sorry, but when it comes to the where we're going in the economy and where we're going with the Fed and the federal funds rate and also the action in the bond market, could that make the the 30-year mortgage interest rate situation a lot more rocky going forward?
Well, this is one of those times where when you look at numbers, what you expect to happen is usually the opposite of what happens. If the economy does slow down, your last guest was just talking about that, and if we see the Federal Reserve have to jump in to prevent, for example, more job losses, what usually happens at that point is mortgage rates come down. So a booming economy with you know, very, very low unemployment and fast rising wages usually means higher mortgage rates, and a slower economy typically results in lower mortgage rates. So there may be a silver lining in that economic cloud that you were talking about earlier.
And then what if we find ourselves in a stagflationary environment where there is little to no economic growth, but inflation is still high and interest rates are still high? What do you do then when you're in the housing market?
You hunker down for what's probably going to be a very slow selling season. That's a difficult situation to resolve. Looking at it from a home sales perspective, the one thing I will tell you is that demographics still provide a very, very strong tailwind for housing in the long run. We still haven't peaked in terms of the number of millennials reaching the average age to be a first-time home buyer. That won't happen until next year. And so there is a lot of pent-up demand for when market conditions improve. But if we do hit that kind of scenario you just talked about, very high interest rates, very slow or negative growth in the economy, people will basically hold off on making those large long-term financial commitments, and we'd likely see home sales slow down even further.
Rick Sharga, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The energy markets are reflecting the latest economic news. Let's check in with Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst at GasBuddy.com in Chicago. Patrick, thank you for joining us today. And oil trading for about $58 a barrel today, and that seems like oil traders are making a bet on a plunge in demand before too long.
Well, not only that, Rob, we're still continuing with the same economic headwinds that are affecting the broader market today, with the slowdown in the economy here the first 3 months of the year. But now also today, Reuters reporting that the Saudis are accepting lower oil prices, signaling that it will be okay with lower oil prices and that it will likely not continue to hold back production. So another worry here, not only a slowdown in the U.S. economy and potentially globally, but more signals from oil producers, this one by Saudi Arabia, who suggested that they're okay with lower oil prices. In the last week, we've also seen Kazakhstan saying that it doesn't want to be held back by OPEC's low quotas. So we have certainly a paradigm shift here from oil producers who are suddenly wanting to produce a lot more crude oil. That's bringing the price of WTI crude oil to $58, down about 3.5%, almost 4% today. And that could bring down energy prices even more substantially. The national average today, $3.17 a gallon. That's 50 cents a gallon lower than it was a year ago.
And what does this mean heading into the summer driving season? Because 3 years ago, around this time, we were talking about potentially record prices at the pump in the summer of 2022. What's it going to be like if you're going on that road trip in the summer of 2025?
Well, a lot of headlines back in 2022 were pushing oil up. Now we're switching those headlines to push oil down. Indeed, Russia potential ceasefire with Ukraine still as a potential, as well as an Iran nuclear deal. All of this is going to mean that motorists are going to be shelling out quite a bit less at the pump this summer. In fact, Chicagoland's average has not been this low this time of year since 2021. That was at the height of the pandemic. The average today in the metro area, just $3.52 a gallon. That is what we could see for a good portion of the summer, if not even slightly below that. Of course, there's always the potential for refining issues. In fact, ExxonMobil Joliet reporting some issues late last week, but that's really not rallying prices up. So consumers likely to pay a lot less at the pump this summer.
We have an administration in Washington now that wants to encourage oil exploration and oil drilling wherever and whenever possible. But with the price of oil at $58 a barrel, when does it become worth it for oil companies to make that investment?
Well, it's certainly going to be challenging with today's environment. In fact, looking at some of the oil stocks, ExxonMobil down over 3% today, matching the big drop that we're seeing in oil. It's not good news for oil producers who are going to have to live with potentially sub $60 oil. It certainly may be a win for consumers in the short term, but also the U.S. amount of rigs drilling for oil has been dropping noticeably. That is usually a lagging indicator, a leading but lagging indicator of where oil prices may go and where U.S. oil production may go. So while the president wants to drill more, arguably U.S. oil companies seeing lower prices are likely to drill less. That's something that will probably affect us more in the many months down the road than it is today.
Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst, GasBuddy.com in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, including charity and volunteering in a financial plan.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
The noon business hour continues. The markets are lower on this Wednesday afternoon. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial in Chicago. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. And the markets are, how do the markets interpret a day like today, where you have GDP contracting by 0.3%, and there's just an awful lot under the hood? They're selling off today, but how will they behave the rest of the week?
Well, Rob, it's a great question. In the month of April, has just been sensational. We've seen dramatic amount of volatility. It feels like we've lived 1 year of trading markets squished into the month of April. But today, GDP, yes, it did come in negative 0.3%. But you have to remember, trade was subtracted. So about 4.8% of that being subtracted was actually trade. So that being aside, if you exclude trade, the economy actually did not contract. We still had some growth, albeit slower. But what we're seeing today at the last day of the month, we may actually see the market try and get positive today. But we did see the S&P 500 in correction mode in the wake of the tariffs that we continue to talk about on a daily, hourly basis have put a ton of volatility. The VIX went over 60 early in the month of April. Now the VIX is back under 25, and it seems there may be a clearer path if we get India, Japan, just one of these trade deals done, and we could see the markets move higher.
Now, we do have, as you point out, the VIX at one point hit 60. It's still above 20, and a lot of volatility, a lot of big swings in the market. And even if, as a trader or as an investor, if you're pounding Maalox while the number goes up, is that a sign of a healthy market?
Well, no, that's a great point. And that type of volatility, I think we have to remember where we came from, Rob. And this volatility, it doesn't feel good. You're absolutely right. When the market is moving 8% one day down and 6% up the next day, that is not a healthy environment. But I think we have seen this trade tariff conversation. They're trying to reset the table, which has been, you know, a problem for decades, not just years, but been decades. So this has been a kind of a surprise, caught a lot of people off sides. But I do think there is a path moving forward here once we get these markets to calm down. To your point, the VIX at 25 is still elevated. But inside of this volatility, there's been a ton of opportunity. We've really been embracing this. This week, we're seeing one-third of the S&P 500 report. We're seeing Microsoft and Meta report today, Amazon and Apple. And we have seen that technology revalue. Those Mag 7 stocks we talk about, they've come down dramatically. So I think there's an opportunity to be a stock picker again if we do see some tranquility come back to the market and refocus on getting tax initiatives accomplished and some M&A.
There's just so much stuff to talk about, and that really has been the case since April 2nd, that it seems like if you want to have this discussion about what is going to happen, because countries or companies are pulling their guidance. They have no idea what's going to happen in 2025 now. Just take it one step at a time, one data point at a time. And it seems like in the end, this entire discussion could be academic if the job market and consumer spending remains resilient, as was the case during the run-up in inflation 3 years ago.
Well, and that's the hardest thing to measure, Rob. You're absolutely right. And I think when you see an acute volatile move lower like we did, everyone says it's different this time. But is it really different? We wanted to reposition into this fear. And whenever you see the VIX over 60, that's actually a great time historically to buy stocks. But I do think that we're having a hard time getting transparency. Is this President Trump's tactic to get better trade tariffs? Are we going to actually see those trade tariffs go to zero if they buy soybeans and corn and LNG from us? So we don't know that, but I think the market is starting to discount. We priced in the worst case scenarios. I think moving forward next month, we may see a little bit of green shoots, a little bit of optimism, but we still have a long way to go. But one takeaway, the 10-year note, it's down at 4.15%. That's a win for homeowners and for anyone who has any type of loan tied to a mortgage rate.
Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, exploring the principle of save some, give some, spend some.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. In this segment, we're discussing the element of charity in an overall financial life, and that's why it's important to get kids involved, too. We're joined by Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner and founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago, that website, the Engage Wealth Group, engagewealthgroup.com. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And so many of our conversations when we talk about kids and money is talking about the value of a dollar, the importance of good saving habits, the importance of good spending habits, the importance of investing. But one thing we don't really talk about, and it is just as important, and that is giving of yourself, whether it's financially or the gift of time.
Yeah, Rob, you know, our most precious asset is not our 401k, our house, or bank accounts, right? It's our time. And spending time in your community and through charitable work can be not only rewarding for yourself, but also for your family. You know, we talk about kind of the core tenets of financial independence, right? When it comes to income, you save some, you give some, and then you judiciously spend the rest. And, you know, giving some in terms of your time, again, is the most precious offering that you can have.
And when you have kids and they are involved in after-school activities, it is very easy to start giving of your time in various nonprofit or charitable efforts. I mean, I have three daughters who are in Girl Scouts, and part of their Girl Scout activities are various volunteer efforts, whether it's cleaning things up, whether it's leading a food drive or packing lunches for homeless people. You are doing volunteer activities and learning about volunteer activities and learning leadership lessons, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, and it's just such a key component of kind of like what we do in terms of our firm, right? So we enjoy clients who give back to their community, especially when they get their kids involved. So whether you're in a group, again, like the Girl Scouts or some other organization or doing on your own, when you're dealing with children and trying to find what they're interested in, right? What really sparks their attention? And then try to connect that somehow to some sort of community engagement and or charitable endeavor, because now they're vested and they're interested. And again, whether you're working on trying to get yourself a badge, if you would, with the Girl Scouts, or just giving back to your community, again, make it important and make it consistent, because again, it can really shape the future of the next generation.
Now, when you talk to college counselors and you talk to parents who have just gone through the college admissions process and maybe the process of applying for scholarships, they will tell you that those volunteer opportunities, even if we're talking about fifth grade, sixth grade, where you have an opportunity to volunteer or especially show leadership in a volunteer capacity, that could be worth a lot of money to you when it comes time to apply for scholarships when they turn 18.
Yeah, good point, Rob. But first and foremost, make this an authentic endeavor, right? Make sure it's coming from a core of in terms of giving and giving of your time, not because you're trying to angle in terms of college careers. But yes, unmistakably, your involvement in your community and especially leadership roles can really help in regards to formulating that, having you look a little bit brighter, if you would, in terms of other students in terms of college admissions. So yes, that's very helpful. But again, make sure it's an authentic core and your child is doing this for the right reasons, again, not just angling for college admission standards.
Right, because I think you bring up a very good point, and that is, as a parent, the temptation to optimize your child's life for some sort of goal down the road, whether it's making sure they are in all sort, they're in the right sports or they're doing the right after-school activities or academic activities in order to become the best and most attractive college freshmen they can be, you avoid the fact that those volunteer opportunities and letting them explore their own interests as a volunteer results in them just becoming a more well-rounded person, which benefits them in all sorts of ways later on.
It's an excellent point. And becoming a servant leader, right? So you're a part of an organization that resonates with you deeply. That will allow you then to ascend to those roles naturally. And again, you've got to get that following and people. And those are your life skills that can carry with you for decades in the future. So yes, getting involved in something that's authentic, that's important, that resonates with the entire family and with the child can go a long way in terms of developing that child, not just for one stated goal, but just overall roundness in terms of who they are as people.
Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner and founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Find him online at engagewealthgroup.com.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
When the stock market dips, some investors look to convert their Roth IRAs. Let's get the perspective of Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And I think this is a conversation that potentially could have sounded different a month ago or a month ago as of May 2nd. And since then, the markets have recovered somewhat since that tariff announcement was made. So when is a good time to even entertain this notion?
Well, I hate to say it, but there's no easy answer to your question. It's a good question. And you're right that people will look at the stock market's fluctuations as a reason to decide to do these conversions. But the more that, and I have to say, it's not just me, but the more that people I follow have studied when to convert to or from a Roth IRA, is the more they conclude that there's no easy answer. For example, it depends, of course, on a bet where future tax rates will be, where the stock market will be in the future, and so forth. Those are not easy bets to begin with. But it also, when you have to take into account the following, for example, tax code rates, the rates that you pay on your taxes are indexed to inflation. So it's not just an easy thing to say, well, if we earn this much this year and 10 years from now, the tax rate would be the same. It would not be the same. And furthermore, you have to take into account that the Medicare price for Part D is dependent on your income that you take out of your IRA. There are so many variables. I have to end up telling my clients that they need to really sit down with a financial planner.
If you do go sit down with your financial planner and they counsel that this is a good idea, how labor intensive is it and how expensive is it to you up front?
Well, theoretically, it's going to be very cheap. It's just a matter of whatever company, Fidelity or Vanguard or State Street or any of the large brokerages, which is where most of us have our IRAs or our Roth IRAs. What you have to do is simply tell them that you want to take a withdrawal from it. They produce a statement that they then will file with the IRS, and then you just tell them where you want the money to go. They will withhold the amount of tax that they calculate that you'll have to pay on it. So what you'll have to do is just simply tell them that whatever transaction costs there are is all you really have to pay.
Now, given all of the variables that we discussed about whether this makes sense, and you have to make a lot of predictions about where certain things are going to be if this makes sense for you, but what makes it advantageous at a time when the market dips?
Well, the assumption is that the stock market's going to rebound. And so if it rebounds tax-free, then you're getting more of your gain without having to pay tax on it. So basically, the bet is that you just have a temporary discount on your tax, on what your portfolio was worth, and so you take advantage of it to pay a lower tax. But there's so many assumptions that go into that, I'd say it's more speculative than it is a surefire bet.
Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com in Washington, D.C. Thank you for joining us today. You'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Odyssey app.